Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the PFS Global Support Podcast. Our mission is to provide support, guidance, and coping strategies for thousands upon thousands of men the world over afflicted with post-finasteride syndrome. While medical researchers are learning more about this devastating condition in an effort to cure it, we're here to listen to your experiences, share them across borders, and learn firsthand how finasteride can negatively impact not only those who've taken the prescription medication, but their loved ones as well. Together, we can tackle this growing epidemic and put an end to it for future generations.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever you are all over the world. My name is Amir Karakuti, and I'm your host for the PFS Global Podcast for supporting people who are going through what's called post-finasteride syndrome. And I was actually hit with it as well. And today, actually, we're going to, you know, if you've listened to my stories of my past or stories of the people I've had on the show, a lot of times I've had people that have been clearly affected with PFS, but I've also had medical doctors on, and as well as a psychologist who also was afflicted with PFS, Dr. Bruin, which was wonderful. Every show we've done has been just so surprising and so heartfelt. And today, actually, I don't have a guest. It's going to be me, and this is off the cuff. I'm literally sitting here on a Sunday at my house. I'm all alone. My wife's having one of our baby showers back home, but I've decided that I'm going to do this for the listeners out there that are going through depression and anxiety and really, really having some low moments or suicidal ideation and things like that. Now, before I continue, I want to make it very clear. I am not a medical doctor. I'm not a psychologist. Okay. I'm just somebody that got severely affected with post-finasteride syndrome or alopecia. And I'm going to just tell you what I've found out from my own experience, what has really helped me. Okay. And I have good news and bad news with what I'm about to share. The good news is you're going to be okay. That's the good news. Okay. The bad news is this is not really bad news, but what I'm about to share with you is not a strategy. Okay. That might be actually really, really good news. It's something that you already have inside of you. And it's more of a description of what's happening more than a prescription of what to do. And I want you to just bear with me. And you know, this call is going to be very, very different. This podcast is a little bit different. So I want you to sit and listen to this from a different place, okay? If you're listening to it right now and you're in your lowest moments, just take the time off for the next hour and give yourself permission and allow yourself to not have to be stuck in your thinking for a moment. Just and if you're stuck in your thinking and you're having a really rough time, that's okay too, okay? Because what we're going to be talking about is not a informational way of figuring things out. It's going to be an experiential way. In other words, I'm not going to sit here and tell you, well, as soon as you have a bad thought, go on a walk or, you know, go read, because that stuff works, right? Until it doesn't. That's the truth. You know, for people who are suffering from PFS, when someone tells you, well, go pick up and read a book. Well, when you're in the lowest of your low, reading a book sounds miserable. When you're in the lowest of your low, going on a walk, you're bringing your thoughts with you. So you and I both know those are great advice when you're kind of feeling okay. And you know that it's, you know, it's going to do what it's going to do. But when we're in our low, it looks different. So this podcast is going to talk about what do we do when we're on our lowest point of our thinking, when we're just in the worst part of it, as a lot of us call it, the finasteride crash. And, you know, I'm going to share my experience, and I would love for you guys to let me know what you thought about this and if it's something that you want me to continue to talk about in between having, people like callers and in between having guests. But if this resonates with you, please let me know so I can continue. And if it doesn't, let me know that too. So that's just kind of setting up the table and the primer of it all. But I'll tell you what happened to me. After after finding out I had PFS. I went through a period where I was actually okay for a long time. My doctor applauded me for not really feeling upset about it. And one day I woke up and I was effing pissed. I woke up and I said, wait a minute. My doctor, who was my family friend as well, put me on a drug that literally made me, is it called a eunuch or a eunuch? What is it? You know, the boys that get their privates cut off. Well, that's literally what happened to me. I'm about to get married. I'm marrying the most love of my life, the most beautiful woman of my dreams, and I can't even have sex with her. I was so freaking upset. And I was in my lowest of my low, and guess what I did? I called the office. I said, I need to make an appointment. I'm not sick. I need to talk to the doctor right now. And they're like, is everything okay? I'm like, no, everything's not okay. I need to make an appointment. And I wanted him to know how pissed off I was. So I started to drive there. And as I was driving there, I noticed that my moods were changing. Like, there was a point where I didn't feel as upset while I was driving because I was, like, looking at the, you know, other cars, and I just – other thoughts came in, and I'm like, hey, I can't feel better right now while I'm about to go there. I need to show him how pissed off I am. And I had all my paperwork to show him all the stuff that Dr. Goldstein told me, and, like, you know, I found all the stuff on PFS and what it does and all the side effects. You know, I had it all in my – you know, I was working it in my head while I was driving, and and as I got there, I noticed, you know, I felt a sense of calm for a minute. But then when I reminded myself, no, this is like, you know, you got to tell him how you feel, I got angry again. And I, you know, I got to his office. I sat down. The doctor came in. And that the doctor that I, you know, that prescribed it to me, I've known him for years. He's known me since I was, 15 years old. He's been an incredible doctor to me, you know, outside of giving me a drug that nearly, you know, pretty much ruined my life. But I sat there with him and I said, do you know what you've done to me? And he's looking at me in shock. And I said, look at this. And I pulled out all the paperwork. I said, I went to Dr. Goldstein and this is what happened. And this is what I've been dealing with. I feel like an 80-year-old man. I don't have sexual thoughts. My libido's gone. You know, I just gave him a list. And it literally, the list that was on that paper, I had every single symptom. Every single one of them. And I'm like, you know, and not only that, when I went to you, I was trying to tell you what happened to me. And you said, oh, here's Viagra or here's, you know, here's Adderall or, you know, you're just trying to fix it. You never really gave me blood work. And I was trying to explain to you what was going on with me. What is wrong with you? How could you do this to me? Well, he sat there for a moment and he looked over my paperwork. And he looked up at me. And I at that point was teary-eyed, and I was furious, and I was teary-eyed, and he looked at me and said, I am so sorry. Now, I didn't want him to say that to me, but I didn't know what I wanted him to say, but I wanted justice, or I wanted something. But I noticed something in me, that as I settled, as I explained what happened, you know, and I got that frustration out, I settled in my thinking for a minute. And as my thinking settled, I felt different. And this is going to sound really weird for people listening, okay? I'm not saying everyone should do this. But I got a sense of compassion for the doctor that prescribed me finasteride. I know this sounds really crazy, but there was something in me that, irrelevant of what my circumstances were, I saw compassion for another human being because he was ignorant about what was going on. Okay. Now that's not something I chose. That's not something that I planned on. I was going in there to rip him a new, you know, a-hole, but I couldn't. My thinking changed. And I realized when I left that from the start of when I got home, and all the way to the doctor's office, depending on what thought I was in, it completely correlated to the feeling I would have in that moment. In other words, it was like a wave, right? Like if I had a lot of thinking around what was going on in the moment, I felt like crap. And I felt the anxiety and I felt the panic attack. And as soon as a new thought arrived, I got settled again. And then as soon as a new thought arrived that was, you know, riling my head up again, I felt anxious again. And I went, wait a minute. This has nothing to do with my circumstances. Although it looks like it, because anytime I thought about Propecia, I felt anxious. So surely it had to be the Propecia that was doing it. What occurred to me is, when I thought about Propecia, when I thought about what my doctor did, and only when I thought about those things is when I felt it. That was the only time. And so I put the two and two together, because there were times where I would get on Propecia, the Propecia website, and I would get furious. And there was times where I would sit down, and if I was in a better mood and I would read it, I'd go, oh, man, that sounds terrible. Wow. Man, I'm going through that too, but wow, it's not. And it didn't sound as bad in that moment. And again, that meant that everything was an inside job. And that was a real, really big eye-opener. And the thought that I held on to, that this is not the way to live, this is not what I thought my life is going to be like. How can I at this age be sexually impotent for the rest? When I had those thoughts, I felt miserable. When I was in my thinking, I felt miserable. And then, here's a really good example. You know, as I was driving to the doctor's office, I was in that space where I was so freaking angry. And then I saw a car accident on the left-hand side. I looked and I went, ooh, oh my goodness, I hope they're okay. Oh man, it's a motorcycle. Oh, okay, good, the cops are there. And I totally forgot about the thought with my doctor for a moment. I totally forgot to think about what I was going to say to the doctor, because I was preoccupied with the crash for a moment. And then looking back, I had to remember what I was pissed off about in order to feel angry again. Now, this was a huge insight. Now, you may be listening to me going, okay, so what's the big deal, right? That's kind of like, what's the big deal? But it was one of those moments for me that I saw that in a different way. It hit me like a ton of bricks. That moment to moment, what I'm going to feel is directly related to how much thinking I have around whatever I'm thinking about. Moment to moment, whatever I'm feeling is a direct relation to what I'm thinking about. What I'm feeling is what I'm thinking about. And when the thought changes, at any moment, my feeling changes. The good news I realized is, as bad as things got, I always knew that a new thought would be available. I don't know why I knew that intrinsically. I would be in the worst of my, putting myself in a room where I wanted it to be out of this world, dark. But I went, I know if I ride this out a little bit, my thoughts change. They always have. In the last 36 years of my life, I have never been stuck in a thought forever. And since it's been true for me, that's been my experience, that when your thinking changes, your feelings change, that's good news, which means we're only one thought away from a whole new experience of life. Now, here's the thing that's really tough about what I'm saying. When we're in a thought storm, it looks 100% real. And when we're in it, it looks like it's going to be forever. And not only does it look forever, it looks like the world that we're looking at in that moment is what's really happening. Now, the people that are listening to this, I can imagine when you settled your thinking, there was moments of hope where you said, you know what, I'll figure this out. Or, you know what, I'm in a position where, as bad as it is, I'm not going to give up. There's probably a little voice in the back of your head. And that's what I call wisdom, right? That intuition, that wisdom. And sometimes when we're so deep in our thinking, we can't hear it, right? It's like if someone's playing the flute in the background and you have a band in the front, and it, you know, the louder the band is, the louder the thinking is, the less you will hear the flute or the wisdom that's behind us. And when the band stops playing, we can hear our wisdom again. The part that has compassion regardless of circumstances, right? I have so many people that were so upset at me. I said, how dare you have compassion for the doctor that gave you that finasteride? But I didn't have compassion because he gave me finasteride. I had compassion because when you're not in your thinking, compassion is what's left. But for our thinking, love is what shows up for us. But for our thinking, we're at peace. We can be okay, even where our circumstances aren't. And, you know, this is the same for people who have cancer, right? There are people that I know that have cancer, but they're in a lot of thinking about it, and they think their world is ending. And there, I have friends that have cancer as well, that they're not much thinking about their cancer, and they go and do the marathons, and they spend time with their family. And I'm not judging, and I'm not saying one is better than another. All I'm pointing to is that people are not miserable because of their circumstances. We never are, as much as it looks like it. We are only miserable if we have a lot of thinking around it. Now, someone might say to me, right? Before I say that, let me give you an example. One of my favorite psychologists, Dr. George Pransky, was doing a talk, and he was kind of mentioning the stuff that I'm talking about. And in the audience, I wasn't there, I heard about this. In the audience, a doctor got up, and he had something to say. So he said, so you're telling me children dying of cancer is just a thought? Is that what you want me to tell my patients? That don't worry about it. Your kid who's dying of cancer, well, you're just having thoughts about it. What's the big deal? And you know, the people in the audience were like, whoa, I wonder what he's going to say about that. That's like, wow, you know what? And Dr. George Pransky says something really interesting. And if you want to know more about him, you can YouTube him, George Pransky. And what I'm talking about is called the three principles. And what he said is, children dying of cancer is not a thought. It's a real truth of what happens. And children die of cancer. Adults die of cancer. Cancer does not discriminate. But children dying of cancer, that's happening in your thinking. The anger you have towards what I'm saying, that's happening via thought. Children dying of cancer, it's just what happens. Thought, circumstances in general are neutral. But when we connect a thought to that circumstance is when we give it a particular meaning. Right? Now, I'm not telling you to change your thinking because you and I both know that doesn't work that good. You know, we can have positive thoughts until we don't, right? We can go, okay, think good thoughts to think good thoughts. But the truth of the matter is when we try to come and have better thoughts, well, we're back into more thinking. The best thing in my experience that I found out is not to try to figure out the content of our thinking, but just know that we are thinking human beings, and that's what we do. The way that our system has been designed is that when we think, we feel, no matter what the circumstances. And if what I'm saying is true, then it makes sense that when you're in traffic, right, you can be in the worst traffic and feel okay. And you can be in a little bit of traffic, and if you have a lot of thinking about your work or your relationship or PFS, that traffic is going to look miserable. And the person next to you who's smoking or something or doing something that really bothers you, that's going to really piss you off in that moment if you're in a lot of thinking. But if you're in a good mood, then you can go next door and go, that's really interesting. Oh, that guy's smoking in his car. That's interesting. When we're not in our thinking, things that bother us look interesting. When we're in our thinking, the whole world is out to get us. The traffic is out to get us. The person next to us is out to get us. PFS is out to get us. Now, this is really, really good news. Because now, when you are in a thought storm, you'll know what's happening. And how do you know when you're in a thought storm? Because you feel it, right? We have a built-in system that lets us know when we're in a lot of thinking. It's the same built-in system that's in our physical world, right? That when we put our hand on our stove, we have a built-in system that says, hey, your hand is burning, and it allows us to remove it, right? But we, for some reason, when it comes to thinking, we don't realize that that's actually this, you know, that's what we are intended to do. We get anxiety. But what do? Instead, we go and try to fix it. We go to figure it out. We go into the content of it. Well, why do I feel like this? I need to really figure this out. I cannot feel like this for the rest of my life. That's kind of like putting your hand on the stove, right? Like if you put a hand on a stove and you're looking at your hand going, well, I need to figure this out. Why is it burning? I don't understand. Why am I the only one that gets burned like this? Well, the truth of the matter is if you put your hand out, you stop burning. That's just the nature of how stoves and hands work. And the same nature of when we stop trying to think or think ourselves out of something, the natural thing is that a new thought will come in. Allow it to come in. But see, we've gotten so good at holding on to our thinking. No, this thought is really important. The PFS thought that's coming through, I need to figure this one out. I need to strangle that one. I need to go on all these websites and I need to once and for all handle this. Well, we just become really good at putting our hand on our stove then. Because the truth of the matter is, when we let go of a new thought, when we let go of the thought we're in, a new thought will take its place. It always does. That's the nature of it. Another example I would give you is for those that if what I'm saying is kind of like, let me, you know, I'm kind of getting what you're saying, Amir, but, you know, let me figure this out. Let me give you a metaphor, right? There was a guy by the name of Freddy Krueger. Some of you guys know him. He was the villain on Nightmare on Elm Street. He was the guy that, I guess, he did some bad things with some kids in his neighborhood. So the parents all got into a mob, took him in a house or some place, and they threw gas on him and burned him. And the idea is that he actually never died. His spirit or whatever it was still alive, and he could actually hurt people in dreams. But as soon as the person woke up, they couldn't be hurt at all. In other words, so if you know, if you've seen Nightmare on Elm Street, if the teenagers in the movie fell asleep and he decided to scratch their face, well, when they woke up, their face was genuinely scratched, right? So the idea was to not fall asleep. The problem is that can only last for a day or so until you fall asleep. And as soon as they fell asleep, Freddy Krueger would appear and he would hurt them or kill them or whatever it was. Now, here's what's interesting. The people there in the movie got hip to the idea that when they're in the dream, that they're actually dreaming. And so they actually were able to figure out how to handle Freddy Krueger in their dreams. But if you didn't know that you're in a dream, then what you experienced felt really, really real, right? Now, when they woke up, they couldn't have been hurt, right? So that's the nature. That exact same metaphor is how it is when we're in our thoughts. If you think about thoughts, they're immaterial. They don't exist outside of our own head. And as soon as we engage in that thought, it starts to take form and it starts to look like a Freddy Krueger. And if we get stuck in that thought, we actually physically start to feel the effects of it. Our heart starts to palpitate. Our hands start to get sweaty. But if we get hip to what's happening, we can snap out of it and go, oh, I'm having a thought-generated storm right now. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean you can get out of it, but if you have the capacity to see what's happening, then you can be more gentle on yourself. You can just ride the wave until you wake up, right? Now, there is no need to go back and figure out why you had that thought any more than it didn't make sense when the people, you know, with Freddy Krueger, once they woke up,
to go back and try to fix the dream. Because you and I both know, once you wake up from a nightmare, the content is irrelevant. It doesn't matter what you thought about in the moment. Now, we've been taught from psychology and all that stuff that the content is what's important. We need to go figure out what happened to you. What are you thinking about right now, Amir, that's bothering you? Let's fix it. But that's kind of like going into a dream and having my mom hook up with a neighbor and me try to settle the score and see what's really happening. But the truth of the matter is, as soon as I wake up, I know that it didn't really happen. And what I'm trying to tell you is, as soon as you wake up from a thought-generated storm, now I'm not saying that you're not going through PFS. I am going through it too. But for the most part, I'm able to be gentle to myself when I'm going through a thought storm. I don't need to fix it. I don't need to figure out what's going on. I don't need to buy into every single thing that my brain is saying, whether that's, you know what, your wife's not going to care for you because of what's going on with you. You're not a real man. Those are just thought-generated dreams. That's what Freddie would do in a dream. He would tell you how worthless you are. He would tell you, but you know what, the students got hip to it. They said, you can say whatever you want, but as soon as I wake up, you can't do anything to me. As soon as the dream changes to something else, right, it changes form. Now, kids don't know that, right? Kids, when they have a nightmare, it looks real to them. So what do? We console them, we hold them, and we try to figure it out. We know, though, that as they become more understanding of how dreams work, and when they, you know, there's going to be times where they're going to get older, like me as an adult, we're going to wake up and we're going to be sweating and it's going to feel really real for a moment until we get settled down and grounded and we go, oh, that was not real. Now, we know for the rest of our lives we're going to have nightmares, but we don't worry about it because we know the very next night we may have another a nice dream. We know that every single time we put our head down, we're going to have a new capacity for a new dream. It's the way our system works. So you don't have to wait for a better dream because that's not your job. If that was your job, yes, then you know what? It would be, you know, you'd have to figure out how to have the best dreams, you know, lucid dreaming and all that. But we don't really pay too much attention to that because we know that dreams work a certain way. When you put your head down, you're going to have some generated thoughts which look like dreams. And when you wake up, we are living in the same thought-generated life as well when we're awake. We have a thought. We engage in it. It looks real. We start to feel it. And as we feel it, it further confirms it must be true. And so, that's the worst. So here's kind of the good news. Okay, there's a guy by the name of Sidney Banks. And I highly, highly recommend you look him up on Facebook. He's no longer alive, not on Facebook. Although you can look up Sidney Banks on Facebook and you'll see like different groups. But Google Sidney Banks or YouTube him, and he's brilliant. He said, if the only thing people weren't afraid of was their own experience, that alone would change the world. If the only thing people weren't afraid of is their own experience, that alone would change the world. The worst thing that I hear when people call me is that they're having a feeling and it's creating an experience. Now, I get it. It looks scary. I get it. It's the most miserable thing. I've been there. I promise you that. But just knowing that if I just become more graceful when I'm in a low situation and be very grateful when I come back up, I can weather the storm. I don't need to know what I'm thinking about. I don't need to know the content. I just know that the nature of what's going to happen is that when I have a new thought, it's going to change. That's all there is to it. Now, as I'm talking, I'm just thinking about, you know, it's its implications. You know, if this is happening to you and you're going through your worst moment, how nice would it be as you're going through your thinking to know what's actually happening, right? To know that when you're having those thoughts, it's going to look really, really real, right? Like, I mean, a really good example is, you know, when you get into a fight with your significant other or a family member or a coworker, and you say some terrible, terrible stuff. And then what happens a couple hours later? What happens? When your thinking settles, you go, oh my God, how could I say that to them? Wow, I did not mean that. I don't know what got into me. Now, what do you think happened? We got stuck in a Freddy situation. We had a dream, a thought dream, a thought-generated thing that looked really real. Then we, because of that, it made our reality look real, so it must have been my girlfriend or my wife that caused me to feel this way. It must have been her. So I'm going to tell her how I feel. And once we settle in our thinking, sometimes it takes a minute, sometimes it takes 10 minutes, sometimes it takes a day. It really depends on how long you want to hold on to that thought. Once we settle, we see the world differently again. And guess what shows up first? Is compassion, is love, is this understanding that we didn't have when we're in our thought-generated storm, when we're in our lowest level. So when I know this now, and I still have my low moments, it just lets me know to not have to make a significant life decision in that moment. As hard as it may be, if I know that little piece, that when I'm in my lowest level, to just hold on. I know it's looking really real. I can get out of it eventually. And when I mean I can get out of it, I mean it gets out of it. It gets out of itself. Because that's the nature of thought. A whole new thought's going to come eventually. Right? And so I just go on with my day. I'll walk. I'll go read. Whatever it is, it's not the reading or the walking that's going to do it. But it's going to be allowing fresh new thought to come in, right? And, you know, if you're holding on to a thought, I mean, you probably know what I'm talking about. Have you ever had that happen where you're in so much thinking about work or whatever it is, and then you go on vacation and take a break, and guess what? You brought your thinking with you. Now, we would think, you know, oh, it was the vacation that sucked, but we don't realize that. We bring our thinking with us everywhere. It's an inside job. By design, you cannot feel your circumstances. You can only feel your thinking about circumstances. It's the only way the system works. That means that your wife is not what causes you to be angry. Your thinking around your wife in that moment can cause it. It's not your job that's stressful. It's your thinking around the job that's stressful. Because if jobs were stressful, if that's the truth, then everybody that went to the same job would have the exact same feeling. Everyone that had the exact same relationship would have the same feeling. But the truth of the matter is we know everybody in a job has different thinking around it. Some people don't think at all about their job and they feel okay. There was a moment when I first found out I had PFS. I didn't have much thinking around it and I felt great. I said, oh, at least I know what it is. And my doctor was really confused. My doctor's like, so you're telling me you're not upset? I said, no, why should I be upset? You just told me what I have. And my wife said something really brilliant. She said, Amir's too stupid to know that this thing is a problem, right? And at first I got offended, like, how dare she say that? But I got what she said. She's saying that right now I don't have a lot of thinking around it because it's not a problem for me right now. Now, if I had a parking ticket outside, I probably would have had a lot more thinking around that. But see, did you catch that? If I got a parking ticket, I would have probably had a lot more thinking around it, in which case I would have thought the parking ticket would have got me upset. But it wouldn't be the parking ticket. It would be the fact that I would have a lot of thinking around it. Now, if you notice, I'm saying the same thing over and over again in hopes that you hear something differently as I say the same thing. And if this doesn't make sense to you, go back and listen to it from a new space, from a place where you're not trying to figure out what I'm saying. Go back and listen to it like you're going to listen to a song, right? Because if you go into it like, I'm going to tell you a joke and you're going to figure out the joke. Well, as soon as you try to intellectualize this joke, it loses its meaning, its value, its funness. What I'm pointing to, it's simply what I'm pointing to. It's not the words that I'm saying. So don't mind what I'm saying, because that's just a pointer. I want you to see this for yourself from a deeper level. I want you to notice when you feel your best, and if you have a lot of thinking around that time, and when you feel your worst. And you'll notice that you can feel your best and worst at any moment, irrelevant of the circumstance you're in, wherever you're at. You could be at the same stressful job and one day feel okay at that job. And then you can go to church and feel the most miserable. And why would you be miserable at church, right? And it makes sense when you go to yoga, people think it's yoga that makes them feel good, right? And there is truth to that. But the truth of the matter is, when we go to yoga, we allow ourselves to have less thinking for a little bit. That's the idea. Why does meditation work? It's not because people are actually meditating. It's because the idea is to have less thinking when you're in meditation. So of course it makes sense that we feel good in those kind of things. Surfing, when people surf, when they go on runs, everything that people go to escape, you'll notice the correlation is they typically have less thinking around that time. And when we have things that are stressful, for example, public speaking, right? I used to be deathly afraid of public speaking. Deathly afraid of public speaking. And one day I went in, I was supposed to go speak at an event. It's my first speaking gig. I ended up throwing up in the car. I called the guy and said, and I had like half an hour, and I said, I can't talk. I can't go in there. And he's like, how dare you? And he was so pissed off, and I didn't blame him. And I was so embarrassed, and I was mortified of what I did. I was hoping I could get into a car accident on my way to the speaking engagement, because the pain of being in a crash would have been a lot less than the pain of going on stage. But looking back, it wasn't like there's public speaking phobia germs when you walk into a room. The truth of the matter is, when people are afraid, it's because they have a lot of things around speaking. What am I going to say? What if they don't like me? What if I embarrass myself? You ask any public speaker that's really good on stage and ask them what they're thinking, and guess what they're going to tell you? Oh, I don't know, nothing much. So what happened to me, how I got this like enlightenment moment in what I'm saying is, the next time I went to go hear another person speak, but I went to the place a lot earlier. And I sat down and I watched people come in. Like, this was before anyone had sat down. I went inside and waited for people to come in. And when first five people came in, I said, when am I going to be scared? Let me see. Five people came. I'm like, no, I can talk in front of five people. Then seven people came. 10 people came. I said, ooh, this is what I'm – I think this is where I get scared. And then when 15 people showed up, I said, aha, that's the number that scares me. And I, for some reason, started to crack up because I realized – that at 15 is when I started to have a lot of thinking around public speaking. Until that day, was when I kind of dropped my thinking around public speaking, because I realized I had to make up this Freddy Krueger situation at 15 people, this arbitrary number that doesn't exist. Now, for everyone out there, there is an arbitrary number for having public speaking phobia, right? Some people say 2, some people say 10. If what I'm saying is true, then it makes sense. It has nothing to do with the people at the event. It has nothing to do with the stage. It has everything to do with the amount of thinking you're in. And that's why, you know, when people ask me, so what do you do now? Do you not have public speaking phobias? I said, no, of course I'm still scared. Are you kidding me? But the difference is, I know it's just a feeling. The worst that can happen when I get on stage is I'm going to have a feeling. That's it. That's the worst. And it happens to be that when you start talking, the feeling starts to change because now you're going. So the answer that I'm telling you is, you don't have to get rid of the feeling you're in the moment. I know it's weird to say, and the longer you try to fix it, the longer it's gonna stay with you. It's like a mouse trap. You know those traps with the sticky bottoms? And the mouse puts his hand on the sticky trap, and then he goes and uses his other hand to pull his other hand out, and guess what happens? His other foot gets trapped. And then he uses his back feet to remove the front, and then his back feet get trapped, right? Well, that's what our thoughts do. We have a thought, and we try to get out of the thought by having more thinking about it, and we get into this thought storm, and then we go, oh, I can't handle this. But as long as you become aware, as soon as you're in tune and you wake up from what you're seeing, what's happening, all you have to know is that a new thought will be available, a different thought. We're only one thought away from well-being. We're only one thought away from being at peace again. And when we're in the situation we're in, of course we're going to have a lot of thinking around PFS. I get it. I still to this day have a lot of thinking around PFS every once in a while. But it's getting less and less and less because it's like if you go to sleep every night worrying that you're going to have a nightmare, you're probably going to have more nightmares because it's always on your mind not to have a nightmare. The truth of the matter is I don't think about it. I go to sleep and whatever happens, happens, right? It's kind of a given that whatever's going to happen is happening. That's where I'm at with my thinking right now. I kind of know whatever's going to show up is going to show up. I don't have much control over that. And you and I intrinsically know this. And the way that I can tell you that you don't have much control over your thinking, because that's not the way the system's been designed, is if I tell you, you know, time yourself and tell me what you're going to think about a minute from now. If we sit here a minute from now, you have no idea what the thought's going to be, right? But see, that's just the way the system is designed. But that's not good or bad news. It's just the way it is. And the truth of the matter is, we don't know what the next thought's going to be for us either. Unless we hold on to a thought and don't allow new thinking to come in. It's like a hose that you kink. I wonder why we're in this situation. And I know this firsthand because a lot of the people that have emailed me, that have called me, and I tell them, you know, what I'm telling you now. And they say to me, well, you must not understand what I'm going through then, because this is a real problem, right? And the real problems are the ones that we have a lot of thinking about, not the other problems, right? When it's a real problem is when we can't get out of it. And what I'm telling you is a problem is as thick and real as the thinking you have around it. Okay? And I you know, I'll give you one more example before we wrap this up, is when I went through a $1.8 million debt around 6 years ago, I was in a lot of debt. And it was really interesting to see throughout the day, there was times where I'm like, my life is over. I don't know how I'm going to survive. I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to get the money. And then as my thought changed, I went, oh man, what a great lesson and what a great feeling to know that I'm going to make this a project. And then I go back down and I went, this is so crazy. My bank account is not changing, but my feeling around what's happening constantly changes depending on the thought I'm in that moment. That is revolutionary. Revolutionary. If you can see what I'm saying, this will change your world. It really, really will, which means it's not going to be your job to control your thinking anymore. Your only job is to know that you're going to, it's not even a job. I don't want to call it a job. Just know this. Your thoughts will change. And when they change, you will feel different. It always will. So when you are in your lowest mood, when you're listening to this, just know you have the capacity, this inner wisdom that you've had been built in into the system that's bigger than all of us. You know, I'm not going to make this religious or anything. I'm not really a religious person, but there is, I don't know where our thoughts come from to begin with. Isn't that crazy? This thing gets generated. And it gives us life. It gives us a reality. I'll give you a Sydney Banks quote that I really like. Thought is not reality Yet it is the through thought that our realities are created. Isn't that crazy? Thought in of itself is an essence. It's just these synapses that come in. That's not a reality, but that's the thing that creates our reality. And it gives substance to it. Right? And the truth of the matter is if you put thoughts, if you make thoughts like a tea bag, right? If a tea bag is sitting in a cup, it doesn't have flavor. It needs hot water, and it all of a sudden starts to smell and has a taste and it comes alive. Well, when thought hits our consciousness, if a thought just passes through, it has no real flavor, it has no substance to it. But as soon as it hits our consciousness and we start to wrestle with it, it starts to bring out the flavors. And it looks really real, and it feels like we need to fix it. But you can have 10,000 tea bags sitting out, and nothing will happen. And you know what? You can have 10,000 thoughts going through your mind, and the only ones that are going to seep into, you know, the only ones that seep into your consciousness are going to have that smell and this taste and the feeling that's going to correspond with it. But as soon as you let go of that one thought, guess what has to take its place? It's inevitable. A new thought. You're only one thought away from a completely new world. So what I want you to do, if you're listening to this, just know that you have a built-in system that is guiding you through getting you healthy again. The reason that your body is shutting down right now is because your body's wisdom is saying, hey, something's going on in your body. I'm going to let you rest for a little bit. That's not a bad thing. That's your body's internal wisdom saying, I don't want you to go do heavy right now because your body needs to repair itself. You know, I was looking up adrenal fatigue, and one of the main things that goes out is libido. And the reason is because evolutionary speaking, libido is not really needed for us to survive. It's like it's a more of a luxury in a sense, like for our own survival. You know, some of the other parts need to be more active. So our libido goes away and we get tired, and, you know, we start our you know, we can't process foods easier because our stomach starts to shut down. That from the surface looks like a terrible thing, but if you look at it from a bigger perspective, how amazing is our bodies that it actually does something to move us towards getting better. And what I'm telling you, in the physical world, our bodies, whether you cut your hand, it's made to heal. If you get something in your eye is made to water. You've not had anything to do with it. If you rip off a nail, it's made to grow another one. There's nothing you need to do on your part. And the same thing happens in the world of the formless. When you get out of the way, it's made to have fresh new thinking available. When you get out of the way, we're made to be settled down. We're made to be at peace again when we get out of the way. Now, we would think it's so silly if we cut our arm or burned our hand and we sat there and try to make it heal faster, right? Like, I need to figure this out. I'm going to sit here. Yeah, it's day two, and I'm now looking at it. It looks like it's forming a scab. Yep. No, we don't do that. We go on with our life because we intrinsically know we have nothing we can do to help it go any faster. But because thinking is invisible, we don't give it the same kind of thinking around it, right? Like we think if it happens in the invisible world, that's not how it works. We need to come and fix it. And that innocently makes sense. I've done that for a very long time. But just like I intrinsically now know that I wouldn't sit there to try to make my hair grow faster because it's going to do it on its own, or my nails to grow faster because it's going to go on the pace it's going to go, or try to cut a heel faster because that's the nature of how healing works. It's going to do it on its own. Our thinking does that as well. Our new thoughts do that exactly the same way. That's a blessing. That's wisdom. That's something bigger than us that does it. I don't know, you know, scientists know the mechanics of how hands heal, but no one knows why it's going towards that, why it goes towards wisdom, why it goes towards bettering itself at all times. Isn't that fascinating that it does it? And that's a debate for, you know, philosophers, but I don't know the mechanism behind it. I'm not a doctor, but I know that that's a truth. We all do. And I don't want you to trust me with what I'm saying. I want you to test it. I want you to see that when you're feeling down, it's because you're in a lot of thinking. And when you're feeling down, your body is giving you a mechanism via anxiety, depression, and all that stuff that's telling you, red flag, you need to slow down. It's like our check engine light. But what do we do for the most part? If we have the check engine light comes on in our car, it would make sense to pull over to the side and let it cool off. That's what we would do in a car. But when we get into a lot of thinking and our check engine light via our feelings come on, what do? We go into more racing. We go, no. You know, if this feels this way, I really need to fix this. I need to really figure it out. But the truth of the matter is, when our check engine, internal check engine light that has been built in our system comes on, it's telling you to slow down. It's telling you to not make any decisions in this moment. It's telling you that, hey, you're not in your wisdom right now. You're in your personal thinking. And it's not telling you any more than that. And what a gift that we've been given that allows us to know when we're in a lot of thinking. What a gift we've been given that when we have clarity, we know that we're in our wisdom, right? And it's those moments where we just know, you know, when we just feel good, we've all had glimpses. I know you have too. We've all had glimpses of feeling at peace. And that peace will come when we are more gentle on what's happening and when we understand the system. Again, I want you to thank, I want to thank you guys for listening. I really, really hope what I said made sense. If you want to talk more about it, please email me. I'll be more than happy to get on a call with you or, you know, email you or maybe do a follow-up on this if this makes sense. But I really, really hope you heard this on a deeper level, right? And if you're going and listening and going, oh, you know, what an idiot, and he doesn't know what he's talking about, hey, that's okay too. That's okay. I don't want you to trust me on this. I want you to test it and see if what I'm saying holds true, holds water. You know, if there's anything that holds water. I've actually written a book that's very similar to what I'm saying. If you email me, I will be happy to send it out to you free of charge. I don't need your money. I will just send it out to you in hopes that you can see it a little deeper. And if you want any more resources as to what I'm talking about, you can email me as well at PFS Global. What is it? I don't even know what it is. PFSGlobalRadio@gmail.com. And I would be happy to take this a little bit further. But if you want to know more, it's called The Three Principles. Okay. Some of the people that I really like listening to is Michael Neal, and you can hear him on YouTube. Michael Neal is great. Jamie Smart is another guy, and George Pransky, and Dickon Bettinger. Those are some names. Again, you don't have to write these down. I will email you. If you email me back, I'll email you. But really sit with this. This is really, really different, I'm guessing, than what you have been told. What you've heard, you know, about going into your content and figuring it out and fixing it, which if you've tried that, you probably know it hasn't really helped much. So this is what really, really helped me, this description of how things actually work, the system of how life actually produces thinking and produces thought and a feeling correlation. That's really, really, for some reason, has made me live a gentler life. And if you heard something today, just stick with it and just look at that direction. That's all I can say. Just continue looking towards what I'm saying, and more insights will come on. More insights will come up. More wisdom will show up, because that's just the nature of it. Okay? I don't know anyone on this call. I just want to say I love you dearly, simply because we're all going through something together, and we all have the same bond. And just know you're not alone, and it will get easier. I promise you, it will get easier. Just be gentle on yourself. You know, there's two ways. I'll leave you with this, okay? You're either going to be in a thought life. You're either going to be in thought or you're going to be in life, okay? You're either going to be in a thought life or you're going to be in life. One brings misery and the other one brings joy. So go back into life. And when you get stuck in a thought storm, just weather it for a little bit, because you'll always come out at the end. I promise you, it always will work. That's just what it works, how it works. So give it a shot, you know, and when I say give it a shot, I'm not saying give it, there's nothing you need to really do. You just need to see what I'm talking about. Just see what I've seen and sit with this for a little bit. Go back and, you know, listen to this again if you need to. And looking forward to the next podcast coming up. Not sure when I'm going to do it, but I'm going to have my wife, my beautiful wife, on there to talk about her perspective on how she's handled PFS, how our sex life is, and some of the uncomfortable questions that I got from my callers. I'm going to ask her all of them because I want you guys to be informed and prepared and to have a wonderful life, because it is possible, even with going through post-Fanasterite syndrome, we can still have a wonderful life until they get this fixed. You know, this is a really, really crazy thing that we got, but you know what? We're going to handle it. We're bigger than this, and we'll figure it out, and we all have each other for this. So have a wonderful day. If it's a weekend, have a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to PFS Global Support, where we offer coping strategies to thousands upon thousands of men afflicted with post-finasteride syndrome. We're here to share your experiences across borders and learn firsthand how finasteride can negatively impact not only those who've taken the prescription medication, but their loved ones as well. Together, we can tackle PFS and put an end to this growing epidemic for future generations.